Huddy, Archie, and Phil would back me up. So would Shirley, for that matter. She hadn't been around when the Buick came in, but she'd seen plenty and done plenty since taking the dispatch job in the mid-80s. The kids still might not believe it, though. It was a lot to swallow. Too late to back out now, though. What happened about Trooper Rafferty? Ned asked. Nothing, Huddy said. He didn't even get his ugly mug on the side of a milk carton. Ned gazed at him uncertainly, not sure if Huddy was joking or not. Nothing happened, Huddy repeated more quietly this time. That's the insidious thing about disappearance, son. What happened to your dad was terrible, and I'd never try to convince you any different. But at least you know. That's something, isn't it? There's a place where you can go and visit, where you can lay down flowers or take your college acceptance letter.
That's just a grave you're talking about, Ned said. He spoke with a strange patience that made me uneasy. There's a piece of ground, there's a box under it, and there's something in the box that's dressed in my father's uniform, but it's not my father.
But you know what happened to him, Huddy insisted. With Ennis, he spread his hands with the palms down, then turned them up like a magician at the end of a good trick. Archie had gone inside, probably to take a leak. Now he came back and sat down. All quiet? I asked. Well, yes and no, Sarge. Steph told me to tell you she's getting those bursts of interference on the radio again, those little short ones. You know what I mean? Also, DSS is kaputnik. Just that sign on the TV screen that says stand by. Steph was Stephanie Colucci, Shirley's second-shift replacement in dispatch and old Andy Colucci's niece. The DSS was our little satellite dish, paid for out of our own pockets, like the exercise equipment in the corner upstairs. A year or two ago, someone tacked a poster to the wall beside the free weights showing buff biker types working out in the prison yard up at Shabin. They never take a day off, is the punchline beneath. Archie and I exchanged a glance, then looked over at Shed B. If the microwave oven in the kitchenette wasn't on the fritz now, it soon would be. We might lose the lights and the phone, too, although it had been a while since that had happened. We took up a collection for that rotten old bitch he was married to, Huddy said. That was mighty big of Troop D, in my view. I thought it was to shut her up, Phil said. Wasn't nothing going to shut that one up, Huddy said. She meant to have her say. Anyone who ever met her knew that. It wasn't exactly a collection, and he wasn't married to her, I said. The woman was his sister. I thought I made that clear. He was married to her, Huddy insisted. They were like an old couple, with all the yaps and grumps and sore places. They did everything married folks do except for the old in-out. And for all I know it, snip, snip, bite your lip, Shirley said mildly. Yeah, Huddy said, I suppose. Tony passed the hat and we all tossed in as much as we could, I told Ned. Then Buck Flanders' brother, he's a stockbroker in Pittsburgh, invested it for her. It was Tony's idea to do it that way rather than just hand her a check. Huddy was nodding. He brought it up at that meeting, he called. The one in the back room at the Countryway. Taking care of the dragon was just about the last item on the agenda. Huddy turned directly to Ned. By then we knew nobody was going to find Ennis, and that Ennis wasn't just going to walk into a police station somewhere in Bakersfield, California, or Nome, Alaska, with a case of amnesia from a knock on the head. He was gone. Maybe to the same place the fella in the black coat and hat went off to. Maybe to some other place, but gone either way. There was no body, no signs of violence, not even any clothes, but Annie was gone.